TheChairShot.com.
TheChairShot.com. Always,
always
use your head.
You are now listening to Chair Shot Radio. Always use your head.
We are back, and hopefully you were enjoying the Sting theme song. So there you go, Patrick O'Dowd. You've been asking for it for weeks, and now you got it. Man called Sting.
And I appreciate it, though. I do want to call you out for playing it one time previously, like when I wasn't on the show. I was so sad that I missed it out live the first time.
Well, you know, you should have been on the show.
Oh, I'm sorry. I'll tell my wife to never have kids again.
Exactly.
That's not cool.
So excellent. Well, man, we are privileged to have with us a very special guest on the program, a guest that we're super excited to have, of course. A lot of you might know him as Chris Masters in the WWE, but he is Christopher Mordatsky, and he's on a campaign to get himself back in the mainstream wrestling and get himself on Impact Wrestling. And, of course, he's tearing it up in India for Ring Ka King as the American Adonis. So let's please welcome in our very special guest, the first of two guests this week, and that is Christopher Mordatsky.
I am digging the man called Sting. I love it.
Thank you.
I love it.
We do like
it. I haven't heard that song in ages. That's one of my favorites, too. So I was definitely really appreciating that as I was listening to you guys. That was great.
No problem. We're old school fans at heart, and so we do like to do that from time to time. And the other songs we use the Steiner Line song. We use the Bad Street theme. Yeah, we go old school with that.
What about the Axe and the Smash? Their Demolition.
Disaster. Next week on the Greg DeMarco Show, we're going to have to play the Demolition theme song, and we'll leave it.
Hey, I'm a lifelong fan, too, man. That Stinger thing was great. What's up, guys? How you doing?
We're good.
Doing excellent. We're doing excellent, and we appreciate you coming on. Of course, everybody, the voice you hear is the voice of Christopher Mordatsky, formerly known as Chris Masters. Very, very happy to have him on the show. And do thank you up front, Chris, for taking time out of your busy schedule for us and our listeners. We definitely do appreciate that.
Now, I know that you guys are the ones supposed to be asking the questions, but I just have to ask. I mean, I was hearing all this stuff last night about Dave Otunga doing – some kind of masterpiece-esque entrance, and
He did a little pose.
Go ahead.
Oh yeah, he came out on the stage and he got down on like one knee and he slowly brought the arm up.
Oh no, he didn't.
Oh yes, he did.
Then what did he do?
That's pretty much it. And then he just came up and did a little pop up after he froze down in the thinker pose, and then he popped up and started to walk through his walk down to the ring.
Who in the hell does he think he is?
I think he might have taken the...
Everybody knows that only I can bow to my knee and then pose. I'm just joking. That's pretty funny. But, yeah, it created a lot of commotion on Twitter last night. All kinds of people told me about Dave Otunga, and I wasn't watching Raw. You know, I'm on a bit of a boycott myself for the time being. I mean, I've seen a... I mean, like you guys, I'm a lifelong fan, and, you know, my favorite wrestling is old wrestling. So if I'm going to watch something, it's going to be probably from, you know, 10 years ago or so, probably. Or, you know, of course, I'll watch Impact on Thursday, seeing as that the MTI campaign is in full swing, 2012, baby.
That is true, and that's what, you know, the big motivation to bring you on the show is try to help you get on Impact Wrestling, and we are definitely going to get there. Don't you worry about that. But before we get to your TNA movement or even your WWE run, I want to go back to your time in Ultimate Pro Wrestling, promotion responsible for such people as Samoa Joe, Christopher Daniels, Frankie Kazarian, even John Cena. Talk about the impact of your time you spent there and the training that you had.
Well, I mean, it was UPW is a great place for like learning, you know, how to bump and learning how to, you know, protect yourself and, you know, learning, you know, mostly the basics because, you know, once it came down to developmental, it got much more in-depth, you know, it became more about not necessarily, you know, learning how to take a hip toss. It was much more about, you know, making sense of a match and, you know, well, you know, we started with Rip Rogers. I mean, you know, the UPW thing is, it was a great place, but it's an easy thing to kind of fast forward through because, you know, most of it was just learning how to do the generic universal spot, which was the drop down, hip, leapfrog, hip toss, arm drag, body slam, and, you know, tuck your chin, hit the ropes the right way, that kind of stuff. And, you know, so we learned a lot of that there. The shows that UPW put on were freaking awesome, though. I will say that. Rick Bassman has been nothing but good to me. Mm-hmm. And, I mean, they put on awesome shows. I mean, they were full-on productions. So, like, my introduction to the business was very cool. And, you know, I spent about a year there. I mean, I initially started at 17 for about 2 months, fractured my ankle, had to have surgery, and then I came back in 19 after taking up bodybuilding as a hobby, and, you know, I was off to the races.
Nice, and I actually got my hands once on a two-disc set of Before There Were Stars, and it was essentially all UPW stuff, and it's amazing to watch and see the prototype and see, you know, some of, you know, Christopher Daniels with a full head of hair and stuff like that. So
Really?
Yeah, he had a full head of hair and a battle royal where the biggest participant and the main participant was a guy named Christopher Mordetsky.
Oh, my God. No way. That is amazing.
Yeah,
I probably had long hair.
You did, I don't remember if the hair was long or short or not, but you definitely had hair, and I think you had a goatee. So and it went full circle, of course, later in your career.
Man, that feels like ages ago. Wow.
Yeah,
wow.
I forgot you had that DVD. I remember watching that over your place. Like, I remember seeing that. That was crazy.
And the great thing, and this is a total aside by us, and usually it's the guest that Ramo's on today, it's us. That DVD, whoever put it out, literally was in the extras, was advertising for porn DVDs and like,
oh,
full-on X-rated porn commercials on the extras of the DVD set. So
oh, my God. I was going to say, because I've never seen that DVD, so and nor have I endorsed it or anything. I've never seen it before. So,
yeah, no idea.
But, you know, that's not the first time that's happened. You know,
I'm
had other promoters do supposed interviews that ended up turning into DVDs that I saw on sale on the internet, which is quite upsetting.
Oh, yeah, I can understand that. But that's unfortunately a part of the business that you're in. So,
not to put anybody on blast, Axel Portugal. Not that he's listening, I'm sure.
Probably not. Probably not.
Well, let's move forward into a little bit about your WWE run, and we just wanted to start you. We talked about the Masterpiece gimmick. Where did that come from? How did that come to be? And who had the idea for you to be the Masterpiece?
Well, this is how the process happened. I'm Chris Mordetsky is you know, that's who I am during the day. You know,
yep.
My then I go into Chris Masters. No, actually, I went to OVW and. What was it? Dr. Tom Pritchard had just told me one day when I came in, he's like, you're now Chris Masters. So, you know, of course, I'm not going to argue that. I was like, okay. And I kind of rolled with that for a while. And then, you know, I already had kind of the stereotype of a body guy, per se. So, you know what I mean? Because I came in, obviously, like a, you know, with the perception of being a bodybuilder turned wrestler, which I never was. I took up bodybuilding as a hobby to get into wrestling. You know, I've always, like you guys, like we were saying, I was a lifelong fan. But, to get back to the point, what was the point we were getting at?
Oh, just where the gimmick came from, like where the Masterpiece
idea came from. Well, so Dr. Tom Pritchard basically renames me Chris Masters. I have the body guy stereotype, and I'm sitting around one day just hanging out with you know, some of the homies in OVW were chilling, and Matt Morgan actually, he just dropped the Masterpiece on us, and it was just like light bulb went off, brought it to Jimmy Cornette the next day, and from that point on, I was the Masterpiece Chris Masters. And then, you know, we just rolled with that, and then eventually, you know, WWE obviously liked it, and then the next step was the Master Lock. So, you know, it all tied together. Chris Masters, Masterpiece, Master Lock, Masters this, Masters that.
Masters everywhere.
Masters so, everywhere.
So, and then, of course, trying to reunite with
I wonder if I can use the name Masters. That's something I'm going to have to look into. What if I just went by Masters Is that do they own that? I wonder.
I don't know.
Wow, that totally answered a question we were at, because we were going to ask you later
You just stole one of Patrick O'Dowd's questions that he forced me to add. Make sure this gets in there.
Well, it wasn't really a force. It was because of the whole Masters to Impact sort of thing. It was like, you know, can he still use? It was, you know, can you still use that name, or
You know what? That Adonis name is actually kind of good. For Rinka King. I don't know about the American Adonis. That works good for India, because we were doing, you know, like the American Adonis is supposed to be an American heel, and I was working a lot of Indian babyfaces. But the Adonis name is good, maybe with something else before it. I don't know. If anybody listening has anything creative, feel free to suggest. Also, another thing, if anybody listening knows how to change the damn Facebook timeline and disable that, please let me know, because that thing is freaking annoying.
If anybody knows how to do that, it'll be one of our listeners. Don't worry about that.
Oh, please call in and give me step-by-step directions on that, because it's annoying me. I don't like it.
Because we have some great listeners on this show, and we also have a couple that, you know, do live in their parents' basement. So we would definitely have them get on there. But I want to talk a little bit about you got to perform on the grandest stage, as it's called, and that was, of course, at WrestleMania 22, and you teamed up with Carlito.
That's cool.
Yeah.
Had a chance to wrestle Kane and the Big Show, and talk to us about what it's like to wrestle at WrestleMania compared to other events, even, you know, SummerSlam versus WrestleMania.
Well, it's hard to say SummerSlam, because I don't know if I've actually I think that's the one pay-per-view I might have not competed at, as far as I did work Hurricane in in 05 and like the pre-match deal, but
gotcha.
I've worked at every other pay-per-view. It's a combination of the energy of the crowd, because I remember the one I was at was Chicago, and Chicago is just like hardcore, obviously, as you guys know. And
oh, yeah.
That's just hardcore wrestling audience. And, you know, you just, like you guys know, like we've been going back to being a lifelong fan, you know what WrestleMania means. So, feels so long ago at this point, but I will definitely say that it's like it was an adrenaline rush like no other. It was just kind of like you go out there and, you know, you're nervous and you have those butterflies, but it's like you walk out there and it's just like you feel invincible, you know what I mean? Like when I look back at the tape, I can just see how I'm just having that moment of like, you know, where you just feel like you're invincible and you want to go out there and do your thing. And I mean, I think our tag match turned out pretty well. I mean, we were originally actually supposed to win the tag belts in that match, but it got switched, and then, you know, they had Lito and me end up going against each other. But, you know, either way, it was cool, man. I mean, it was definitely a highlight for me. I mean, obviously, I would have liked to have many more matches at WrestleMania. But I remember even the year prior, my first year in WWE, WrestleMania was here at Staples Center, and I got to work the Battle Royal before WrestleMania, which might not seem like a big deal, but, you know, for a guy who's just, you know, I just started on the road maybe 4 months prior, and, you know, so everything was still a big deal to me, let alone being in my hometown at the Staples Center, working the Battle Royal in front of the WrestleMania crowd, and I was the last guy in there with Booker T. You know, Booker T ended up going over, but it was just so cool because, you know, the finishing sequence worked out so perfect, the timing was right, and, you know, that was another kind of like, you know, that was one of the first real huge highlights for me, is just being at the Staples Center and being the last guy in that Battle Royal and it working out as good as it did. So that was a lot of fun. But, you know, definitely the next year was obviously that much more, because it was on the card and it was just like, you know, you knew you were there.
And I can tell you, and before Patrick asked this question, I can tell you that Greg DeMarco and Patrick O'Dowd were two of among several people at a table. And we were, you know, and I'll be honest with you, two of the few people in that Hooters that day pulling for Chris Masters and Carlito in that match. So we were behind you guys.
Well, that's the way it was supposed to be. We were the heels. But, you know, I mean, you can't deny the Chris and Carly show was entertaining. We could have got a lot more mileage out of that. You know, Briz and me Bruce and me go way back, and, you know, like, if they just shot me and him interacting on a day-to-day basis, it would be good entertainment. So, you know, I still, even in my last run in WWE, we went on the we went on a tour. Where was it? We went to Iraq, and they had four groups of people. And the first three groups have about eight people per group, and then the last group is, for some reason, oddly, just Carlito and myself, which Mike Chioda then labeled the probation crew. So, because at this point it was like I was just coming back from being released, and Carlito was kind of on his way out and about to get released. So they kind of, you know, left us there on base. We didn't leave the base or anything like that, but I mean, we had the greatest time. I mean, we entertained the hell out of everybody, and Michael Cole was saying, we need to bring the Chris and Carly show to Raw. But, you know, unfortunately, it just wasn't meant to be at that time. You know, Carly had his thing going on, but it would have been cool, definitely. I mean, I know Cole was pushing for it hard.
Promotional consideration paid for by the following.
Hey folks, PC Tony here. Thanks to our new partnership with Angry Lemonade, you can save 10% on physical products and digital commissions using the promo code CHAIRSHOT. Head to angrylemonade.net to check out their amazing catalog of products and services. Use the promo code CHAIRSHOT to save 10%. That's angrylemonade.net.
And before I move on to my next question, I do want to say one thing that I do appreciate and I love hearing from wrestlers is just sort of the feeling of like being a fan, and you talked about being a fan of it, and the, just sort of the feeling of experiencing WrestleMania. Greg and I went to WrestleMania 26, and even just being in the stands is a crazy experience that sort of blows us away every time. So it's really cool. It's really cool and refreshing to hear that sort of excitement behind the work that you do.
Yeah, and you know, as odd as it sounds, I still have had my rare moments where I can actually escape the bubble, you know, because I feel like after you get into the wrestling business, it's like, you know, I feel like, you know, you're in the bubble, so it's like your perception is sometimes off. That's why I have lifelong wrestling friends that have been fans, and I'll actually ask them, you know what I mean, for their input. Like, you know, granted, if it's somebody who I kind of agreed with while I was growing up, I would ask him his input on this or that, because, like, I feel like we're in the bubble sometimes so long that you lose touch with the, you know, the fan, you know what I mean? You can't
yeah.
see it from the same objective, but, you know, like even getting to watch, like, you know, the last, you know, Shawn Michaels and The Undertaker in his last match. I mean, I remember, I don't think I worked that Mania, obviously, but, you know, just getting to watch that match, I was able to kind of escape from, you know, being a guy in the business to kind of being a guy, you know, a combination of the fan and the guy in the business, because on one hand, I had watched this guy's whole career and, you know, and gotten to work him. And, you know, it was just kind of like it was the final chapter of a big part of, you know, a guy who was a big part of my life as far as inspiring me to pursue this. You know, like Ultimate Warrior was the guy who drew me in, but, you know, ultimately I started really appreciating Sean and Brett and, you know, a lot of the just really talented in-ring guys in the business. And Sean, obviously, just being probably the greatest. So, you know, that was one of those moments for me getting to see that match. I thought I was like, I felt privileged and I felt like, you know, kind of like a fan for a moment there.
Yeah, it was a cool match to watch. You know, and to be there live was pretty cool. So we do want to talk a little bit. You were released from the WWE in 2007. Let's not go too far in the past. In 2007, and that there were a couple of wellness policy violations that were publicized or came out through the rags. How did you move forward from that publicity and from those releases?
You know, it was a lot of it was misconstrued, because, you know, you look up my name and automatically people assume steroids. But, you know, the problem I had at that point in my life was actually prescription pills. You know, to be honest, I'm lucky I'm not, you know, Michael Jackson, Whitney Houston, or, you know, even, you know, better examples are Testu or Umaga, because I went through that same problem as those guys, and it's something that needs the awareness in this country anyway, so I'm not afraid to talk about it. But, yeah, I went through a battle with prescription pill addiction, and that was a huge, I mean, it kind of really completely derailed my career because, you know, once I went to rehab and took that stint off, it was like I was never able to get the company kind of behind me again after that, you know what I mean? Whether it be, you know, after I came back from the rehab or when I was rehired again in 2009, it was just kind of like, you know, at that point, whether it was a lack of faith or whatever it was, but, you know, I made a lot of mistakes, but, you know, I was obviously able to come through and get myself right and, you know, realize that I had a problem and I got myself straight and I'm still here today.
Which is, you know, great news. And we've actually had, we had Jimmy Rave on a few months ago when he talked at length about the issues with prescription drugs in the world of wrestling. And when you, you know, definitely believe in everything you're saying. And it's a huge problem. And it's a problem that needs
to
be.
I wasn't originally going to be released. The thing is once I it was a Monday, and I'm talking about my original release in 2007. Yeah. I got a phone call on Monday saying that I was suspended for 60 days by Johnny, and he said, you know, just, you know, take the 60 days and come back, you know, ready to work. So, you know, and I was injured actually at the time, too, because a week prior I had dislocated my elbow in the Undertaker match. So I was sitting at home injured, and then I get the call that I had failed a wellness policy violation for taking a substance that I wasn't supposed to take. And then I think Tuesday Vince had been put in the hot seat by whether it was Congress and also I think possibly a Bob Costas interview, I think, where they were questioning whether it was me or Randy, I don't know, but questioning whether, you know, they were really disciplining wrestlers and, you know, following the right protocol. And then, you know, the next day I got a phone call and, you know, it was around 11 a.m. and it came up unknown, which you knew it was WWE, and I just had the feeling. I just knew it was coming. So, but I take full responsibility for that one. I mean, you know, I started on the road at 21 years old, and, you know, I'm the first one to admit that I wasn't ready in various ways for the responsibility given to me because, you know, whether it be in-ring wise, I mean, you know, a lot of people want to critique my early work. It's like, well, you know, like, that's the thing. I mean, and you're seeing it still nowadays. I mean, guys are rushed. Some guys are taken with no experience at all, and then they're put into the developmental, in some cases, and then they're put into the developmental system, and then they're on TV within a year. And, you know, you can't possibly really, really get this business in a year. I mean, it's like there's so many different components, and it's just, you know, it's a very complicated business, and it's hard to get, and it takes time. You know, it was just, you know, so that was, I mean, I forgot what the original point was that we were getting at with all this, but.
Well, just talking go ahead.
Yeah, we were talking about your release, and really where we were going to go to next was, you know, obviously, like you said, you're on top of the world, and you're pushing the WWE so fast into your career, and now it's all taken away from you, and you're left with the indies and kind of back to square one. And did that change you? Did it change anything for you? What did that do for you when now your WWE is taken away from you and you're really back to almost like being back at the beginning?
Well, it was a different experience then because I was able to, for the first time in my career, to actually work the independent wrestling scene, which really, you know, I was fortunate enough to not have to do it the other way around. There's a lot of guys out there who are really struggling who have worked indies and, you know, whether they made it to WWE or they didn't. And, you know, it's hard to make money like that. But, you know, I had built a name with WWE, then, you know, I'd been on television. So, you know, I got, I stayed pretty busy and had some of the times of my life on my last, you know, from that time in between 2007 to 2009. But, you know, again, like I said, I mean, I was battling still my personal issues and, you know, it took a while, but I was finally able to, you know, look myself in the mirror and, you know, realize that, you know, I had completely derailed myself and, you know, I lost the job that I had, you know, always wanted and always aspired to get to, you know, being with WWE. And I was like, you know, it's time to make a change. And then, so, you know, throughout all that, I mean, you know, I had a blast, but, you know, I did, you know, I think I, in the back of my mind, I always figured that I took responsibility for what happened, but that I would reconcile and get my stuff together and make a comeback, which, you know, ultimately did happen.
When you get released and you get released from prescription medication and then you're sent back out on the road in the indies, do you think, and not necessarily for you, but just in general and what you've seen, does that almost set somebody up to go further into that addiction and kind of get further into that because that support system's kind of taken away at the same time?
Well, I mean, yeah, it just depends. I mean, I went through a patch, obviously a rough patch with it, and, you know, it just, I mean, it all depends on the person, and, you know, you're, ultimately, if you're willing to, like, look yourself in the mirror and realize you have a problem, and if you really just want to live for that, for, you know, much sake. I mean, it's hard to really, when you're in addiction, it's hard to know that you're an addict, or it's hard to realize it. Sometimes you're either going to die or reach rock bottom. You know what I mean? And I was one of the fortunate ones who didn't die, but I did reach rock bottom. So, you know, I had to bounce back from that. And, you know, I've grown so much as a person though since then. So, I mean, it's been, you know, I've been through a lot of life experiences for a guy at 29 years old. You know, I've been through a lot now, and, you know, I feel like I've really matured as a person now, so I feel like, you know, I feel like I'm in a good place.
Well, we've kind of talked around this a little bit at different points, but and you've mentioned it that you did get to come back to the WWE in 2009. When you had that opportunity come back to you, how did your approach in the E differ the second time around versus the first time?
Well, obviously, you know, the first time around, I mean, I started with vignettes and I had the huge push. I mean, and then the second time around, after a certain point, I kind of realized that they had no intention of really using me, you know. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, initially when I got back in 2009, I feel like it was kind of my year where I was just happy to be back. And, but, you know, eventually a fire lit under my ass just kind of around 2010. And it started with, you know, Triple H had given a speech after WrestleMania where he had wrestled Sheamus, you know, about who's next. And, you know, he gave this big speech about who's going to be the next guy to reach for the brass ring and, you know, like who wants it and look what Sheamus did, Sheamus this, Sheamus that. You know, I just thought to myself, I'm like, man, you know, I got all the tools. It's like, you know, why can't that be me? So, and then, you know, as the year progressed, you know, I was basically dithering on superstars, but I remember one specific point where Michael Hayes had criticized my selling. So that was kind of a turning point for me where I went you know, I internalized that and I kind of went back to the drawing board and I, kind of erased all the wrestling that I'd watched over all the years from my mind kind of completely and tried to wash it out and just go out there and really emotionally invest myself in my matches. And, you know, if I got hit, how would I really sell it? And, you know, how, you know, and just basically all the trying to perfect all the different components of my game. I mean, the first thing that, you know, started to come along was the selling. You know what I mean? After Michael said that, it was like it really kind of just something just snapped in my head. And, you know, I approached it different. And I felt like I became probably by the end of 2010 and going into 2011, one of the best sellers in the company. You wouldn't know unless you watch Superstars. But, you know, if you see any of the matches, you'll see that from – and then, you know, that wasn't it. It was also – you know, about, you know, obviously making people believe, you know, getting sympathy and people believing you're hurt, being able to convince people that, but also, you know, bringing it in the baby face comeback, making the, you know, the fire up organic, you know what I mean, and not forced. And, you know, that's all stuff that comes with time, man. That's like, you know, that's why, like, you know, we talk about these ring guys coming in a year. You know, you can't just get that feeling because all you're thinking is, oh, hip toss, body slam, this, insert this here, you know, and you're not able to relax and just emotionally invest and, you know, just, you know, be in the moment type thing.
When you had this experience, and Michael Hayes said this, was there any one person that helped you with that you went to and said, hey, I want to sell better, I want to be more convincing? Was there an individual that you sort of worked with?
No, not at all. It was more just, you know, I was probably, I, you know, I was in the, at the best. Another thing was is I was at kind of the perfect weight and size. So, I mean, I was able to move a lot better. I was around 255, 260. So I was able to move better, and I was just starting to understand the art of it more. I was just starting to understand, you know, it's like I knew how to do all the moves and whatnot, but it's like I started understanding, you know, how you convey, you know, conveying pain to an audience more. I started understanding the art of selling, you know, because there is an art to it. It's an art. Like, selling is an art, and, you know, and being able to convince people you're really hurt in a business that's considered show business is a tough task. But, you know, if you got somebody giving, dishing out something good and you're selling it good, you can accomplish that. And also, you know, just I started understanding the art of storytelling, you know what I mean? Making sense of a match and not just thinking about, oh, you know, let's get this spot in for the sake of getting this move in. More about, like, what makes sense? How are we going to tie in, you know, the heat to the finish? And, you know, if you're going to work my leg, you know what I mean? I'm not going to run on it, you know what I mean? I'm that leg, you know what I mean? And, like, you can see that through a lot of my matches. Like, if you, classic example is the last match I had with Drew McIntyre earlier this year. If you see it, it was like a 17-minute match where he worked over my leg, and it was just probably impeccable storytelling. And, you know, that might sound arrogant to some, but, I mean, watch the match and you tell me any different.
8, 7, 6, 5, 4, 3, 2, 1.
If you own a vehicle with less than 200,000 miles and have an auto warranty about to expire or no warranty coverage at all, listen up. CarShield has a low-cost, month-to-month vehicle protection plan that covers more parts than ever. Visit carshield.com/audio to find out how you could pay almost nothing for covered auto repairs. Drivers who activate this vehicle protection today will also receive free roadside assistance, free towing, and car rental options at no additional cost. Get your free quote today at carshield.com/audio. That's carshield.com/audio.
This is your boy Kenny Killer telling you to make sure you check out thechairshot.com, bringing you breaking news, interviews, podcasts galore, everything pro wrestling. Make sure you check it out, thechairshot.com.
We wanted to, you'd mentioned a little bit, you talked about in your return, you sort of noticed that it seemed fairly clear what your role, what the expectations of your role were going to be sort of moving forward. One of the things that we do tend to work in a lot here in on our show, and then you know out there in the wrestling business, is a lot of the internet rumors and things that sort of float around. One of the rumors that did float around in regards to you was this idea that your role was downplayed due to your prior wellness violations. Did you feel any truth to that, or do you think that was overblown from the internet?
Well, you know, you can never say for sure. I mean, this business is a big mind F, you know, it's like, you know, I wrote that today in an interview, actually. It's like, you know, they don't really give you any clear cut answers. I mean, I'm telling you, when I got released this past time, I was told company restructuring. I mean, what does that mean? You know, but, you know, I just, what was your question? I'm sorry.
Just did you feel that there was any truth to the rumors that your past with the past wellness violations impacted your role in the company?
From a business perspective, you can't help but think that, okay, you know, because going back in there, I still had 2 strikes. Mm-hmm. So I always thought in the back of my mind, I'm like, you know, from a business perspective, it's like, you know, it's kind of a long shot and I'm a high risk candidate to push, you know? Just because if one mess up and I'm gone, I'm out the door. So, and you know, you got to put investment and time and money into people. And, you know, if you're not necessarily confident or 100% sure that they're not going to mess up and I already have 2 strikes, I mean, that could be an issue. But, you know, I don't know if that was ultimately it. I mean, because a lot of interesting things happened going in from 2010 to 2011. It was like, you know, all of a sudden, you know, as my work started progressing, the higher-ups started noticing, and I started becoming praised by, you know, basically all of the agents. I got pulled aside by Hunter on several occasions, you know, kind of, you know, just telling me that Vince has noticed and he's noticed my vast improvements and trying to figure out kind of what exactly do we do with you, or, you know, is it a repackaging or fresh coat of paint, or, you know, or take you off TV for 3 months, you know, different things were thrown around because, you know, obviously they were starting to notice. And then, you know, I went from losing on Superstars for about a year straight to flipping it around and then winning on Superstars. If that even really matters, I don't really know.
Mm-hmm.
But,
yeah.
But, you know, but so, I mean, you know, I really kind of was under the impression just through conversations I had with the office and then what I had been told from other guys who were in Gorilla while my matches were on and what they had heard from Vince. You know, I felt like I was in a great place. I was like, this is going to be my year. You know, I'll, you know, to finally come back and bounce back and, you know, put any doubters to rest and show people, you know, that I'm not just a body. I can go out there and I can work and, you know, I can put on a hell of a match.
Well, of course, I mean, since being released, you've had the opportunity to wrestle all over the world, and especially as part of the Ring Ka King production in India. And talk about that experience and what that's meant to you as a performer and as a person.
Well, it was really cool. I've never been to India. I mean, it was a long, long trip, but we had a great group of guys, and it was such an interesting concept because what it is they took, you know, hand-selected American wrestlers, and we had to work with a group of Indian wrestlers that are literally only maybe 2 months in the training. So, I mean, it was really a challenge to go out there and, you know, be able to put on even a passable match with a lot of these guys because they didn't understand, you know, I mean, in 2 months in, I mean, what do you know? So it was a real challenge, and we had to keep things real basic. But, I mean, India is still, they don't know wrestling too well, so it worked. I mean, it worked to our advantage, and, you know, Jeff Jarrett and Abyss and Dutch and Sanjay and everybody who was involved was like, we had just such a good crew that it was nothing but good times. And like, I think we really made the best out of it. I mean, I wrestled Trevor Murdoch, I think, and that aired, like, I think just about a week ago, which was a pretty good match. And then I ended up working Vieira down the line in the season, which ended up being pretty good, especially for a guy who had only been in the ring training for about 2 months, I believe so. Yeah.
Excellent.
Yeah. And Harry Smith got food poisoning and was in the hospital for 2 days. So,
oh, no.
On a side note.
Yeah, that's what happens overseas. So, and everybody listening, and you are listening to the Greg DeMarco Show with Greg DeMarco and Patrick O'Dowd, presented by ForeignerMania.com and streaming worldwide on the Voice of Choice Nation at VOCNation.com. And I want to talk about your most recent pursuit. Of course, you've gone on a public campaign and a pursuit of a spot in TNA called the MTI or Masters to Impact. And just, you know, kind of tell us why do this? Why go on this campaign?
Let's see. I mean, it's strictly due to the fact that I feel like right now I'm the best I've ever been. And from the feedback I've gotten, you know, seeing as that I'm 29 years old and at my peak, and my only job qualifications being Samoan drops and suplexes, I don't think I should technically be unemployed. So, you know, it's basically, you know, like, I was kind of a member of the IWC before I ever even made it. So it's kind of like my rally cry to the IWC. And it's kind of, and not just the IWC, but wrestling fans in general, just to support the cause. And, you know, if you, you know, like I said, anybody who's seen where I'm at, you know, in just my in-ring work, I mean, I can definitely be an asset to any company. I mean, one company's loss can be another company's gain. Is the way I look at it.
Nice. And you mentioned this a little bit before that you know, through the Ring Ka King work that you've had the opportunity to work with Jeff Jarrett. We know that you also probably have access to Dave Lagana and some other TNA officials. Have you gotten any response yet to the Masters to Impact campaign, or is it still sort of largely building?
That's where it all started is, Ring Ka King. I mean, I got such great vibes from the company, you know, as a whole. And Jeff Jarrett was you know, such a pleasure to work with that, you know, I just kind of felt like, you know, it was definitely, and Dave Lagana is actually the guy who recruited me for the project. So, you know, I have good rapport with some guys there, and I definitely got a good vibe from everybody. So that's what kind of started this whole thing. And, you know, obviously Rinky King is a good good platform to at least showcase where I'm at. And, you know, and obviously, you know, it's an affiliation of TNA. So it's one of those things where campaigns aren't won overnight. That's why I say MTI 2012, it's just like companies, TNA's got a lot of guys on the payroll that they're not even using currently. And, you know, one of them's a good buddy of mine who's pretty well known. So it's just one of those things where timing is everything. So, I mean, in the meantime, I'm doing a good job of staying busy as far as what I'm doing. So, you know, it's definitely something I'm going to still push as much as I can because, you know, this is my only true passion and love is pro wrestling. So if I'm not going to do it for WWE, then, you know, screw it. I mean, you know, Impact's got great talent and I got something to bring.
So, and you talked about, you know, you're 29 years old, you're in your prime. Is TNA now the ultimate goal, or do you want to get back into the WWE, and do you want to have a shot at having a major run?
You know, I don't know what the future holds. I mean, I won't rule out anything at this point just because this business is so unpredictable. It's so hot, cold. It's so one minute this, one minute that. You know, it's just like, you know, WWE goes through its phases of different things. So, you know, you can never rule it out. But, you know, I really felt like I really put in a lot of work in my last year there. And so obviously there are some, you know, I'm not bitter towards the company because they've given me the opportunity to develop a name for myself and I'm still able to make a living and wrestle based upon my time with them. But, you know, on the other hand, after, you know, having the conversations I had with the people I did, you know, I can't help but feel almost kind of betrayed by the whole thing. And, you know, it's just kind of one of those things where it's not something that, you know, I don't want to be, you know, I wouldn't even kind of entertain the thought for another couple of years. I'd rather just stay completely away from that company in general and do my own thing and, you know, be able to diversify my options and, you know, keep wrestling, though. And, you know, also, like I said, I mean, if Impact or Ring of Honor, whatever opportunity present itself, you know, I'm ready.
And I also want to give you bring up one topic that you know people might have even you know, maybe they don't remember you're a part of, but you were a part of the Wrestling Retribution project, of course originally called the Wrestling Revolution project, kind of character known as Concrete. Talk about that experience and what can we expect from that? Can we expect a different Chris Masters than what we've seen before, and just that product in general?
Well, I know there's definitely some quality matches, but I will say, I mean, this was shot over a four-day span, and like I'd like to start by saying I've never worked so many matches in 3 days in all of my life. And so it was extremely exhausting from a physical standpoint, but a lot of fun. Again, we had a good crew, like, you know, Dreamer was behind the scenes, and Lance Storm, you know, guys that I, you know, Lance had trained me back in OVW. Tommy Dreamer's been like my wrestling father for years, so I enjoyed the experience, but I was pretty damn beat up. But I think it'll be good. It's going to be definitely different because the setting is different from what you're used to on a wrestling show. It's more of a, almost like a club bar type atmosphere. But it's got good production, great entrance, and you know I know that I had, and I can't remember the guy's name off the top of my head, but I had a hell of a match with one of the guys there. Forgive me, because I've wrestled I don't know how many matches now and how many different guys, but, you know, I know I had a good one over there, and it should be good. I mean, I would definitely check it out if it's when it's released.
Yeah, we definitely look forward to that. And remind everybody, you know, before we let you go, where can they find you? Where can they find you on Facebook and on Twitter and help support the Masters of Impact campaign?
Oh, well, I finally changed my Twitter name, which everybody was apparently such a big deal. You know, it was WWE Master P for a while, so it's no longer that. I am now at Chris Masters 310, which is my representation of Los Angeles. Rey Mysterio's got 619, I got 310. So you can find me on Twitter at Chris Masters 310. you know, Christopher Mordetsky on Facebook, although nobody will actually know how to spell that. You guys might have to link that or something. And for booking inquiries and whatnot, I'm at masterpiece83@gmail.com. So check it out.
There you go. Excellent. Well, Chris, Christopher Mordetsky, we appreciate all the time you've given us today, and best of luck to you. And I really do hope that this Masters Impact campaign does work out for you, because, I mean, I agree. You really were – people were praising the hell out of your work at the end of your WWE run, and I think we were all kind of surprised when you got let go. And I agree with you in the sense that you likely do have a lot more to offer, and I think there's got to be a spot for you on TV somewhere. So we look forward to seeing that and hope it does work out for you.
Oh, yeah, definitely, baby. And oh, I definitely, and I'm going to be printing out some T-shirts. So anybody going to a WWE or TNA show, they'll be free. You just got to show proof. So, you know, find out details through Twitter.
Excellent. And I happen to write a column for 400 Mania that quite a few people read. So when that comes out, I'll be sure to put that information in there and make sure that people have a way to get their hands on those. So good stuff.
Hey, you guys thought crashing SummerSlam was cool. Maybe I'll crash WrestleMania. How about that?
There you go.
I'm in.
We would love to see that. The folks down in Miami would love it as well. So good stuff, man. Good luck to you, and we hope to hear great things from this campaign and from you in general.
All right, baby. MTI.
That's right.
All right.
We'll talk to you soon. And there you go.
That's cool. Like, I was like, wait, where's the soundbite? Where's the soundbite?
Soundbite was thinking. It was like, and there we go. So... Excellent.
You know, yeah. I typed this on my Facebook during the interview. I do love it when an interview brings out some sort of information or a different side to something that you may have assumed you knew, or that you know that you didn't really know. And I thought it was, you know, we were sort of messaging each other back and forth about what our assumption was for the wellness violations. And a lot of people made that out there. And, you know, to hear that, you know, yet another similar experience to what Jimmy Rave has been talking about time and time again really was, you know, interesting to me. I thought it was very impactful.
Oh, yeah, definitely. And to hear that and to hear him talk about it, and it's such a huge problem, and it's an even bigger problem than I think we thought after the Jimmy Rave interview, and it's probably a bigger problem backstage right now. And something
sure.
that I think some serious attention should be given to and could be given to, and then maybe we need to explore that a little more in the future. Who knows? But, yeah, you know, thank you to Chris Masters and was with us for – Christopher Mordetsky was with us for – you know, it was literally forever, almost an hour, and felt like it just flew by. And that's just, you know, goes to show all the great stories he has to tell, and I'm sure he could have had a ton more too. So we're going to take break number two real quick, and because we do have Gregory Iron.
A little less conversation, a little more action, please. All this aggravation ain't satisfaction in me. A little more bite, a little less bark. A little less fight, a little more spark. Close your mouth and open up your heart, and baby, satisfy me. Satisfy me, baby.
TheChairShot.com. Always use your head.